We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You're listening to Setting the Pace, your go-to Pacers podcast with Alex Golden and Michael Facci.
McConnell pushing again, gets underneath, finds Sabonis for the dunk and the ball.
That's it. That's just Sabonis. Take it right at him.
Caris LeVert, people don't realize how good he really is.
LeVert, skies high for the jam.
Brogdon for three.
Boom, baby.
Warren lets it fly.
Yes! T.J. Warren is not human!
Well, you got it setting the pace, and I think that's terrific.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? It's your boy, Alex Golden here, host of Setting the Pace. How y'all doing today? Wanted to introduce my guy, Mike Facci, with a tribute to how he answers the phone every time we join for our Zoom meeting. So, Facci, what's going on, man?
Alex, always happy to be here, man. I wish I could say that this day two free agency was as eventful as day one, but I feel like I wasn't invited to the party and I watched everybody else have fun today.
Well, the Pacers are at 15 roster spots filled right now until they make a decision on Keelan Martin. I believe that is August 7th. They have to make that decision if they're going to make that contract fully guaranteed or waive him. There is still a Jeremy Lin possibility of a trade there. I'm not sure if that's going to happen, but I think it's a possibility. But Facci, you were not able to be with us on Thursday for our live draft show. It was Rhett Bauer and Dave Cyril filling in for you. And, you know, while it was a really fun show, we really missed you. And it would have been great to just get your live reaction to seeing the Pacers select Chris Duarte with our favorite guy on the board, Moses Moody. What was going through your head seeing this live in a different location?
Alex, I think it's probably good that we didn't get my live reaction because similar to just about every other Pacer fan, I was a little bit let down when we did select the oldest guy in the draft when one of, you know, the more talented upside individuals in Moses Moody was still there, someone that we very much let it be known that's who we wanted, and it was disappointing. However, the days leading up to the draft, I want to say like the final 48 hours, it seemed pretty real that the Pacers were very interested in Duarte and that Golden State was very interested. So I'm not going to lie, I did think they were going to work out a trade with either New York or Atlanta. I mean, it feels like the Cam Reddish rumors have long been dead, but in that 24-hour span, they were heating up.
Yeah, no, and it was just a weird thing because everybody knew that Duarte was the guy that people were potentially trading up for. And so the Pacers, there had been rumors floating around that they had interest in Davion Mitchell and Moses Moody. I heard that from an NBA source, and there was also some stuff going around. I think Chad Ford actually said that Corey Kispert was their favorite if he's still on the board between him and Duarte. He thought Kispert would go around 11 to Charlotte, but Book Night fell thanks to some interesting draft selections made by the Kings and the New Orleans Pelicans at 9 and 10. So he ended up falling further than people expected. So, you know, the Pacers got Duarte, had the press conference on, I believe it was Friday. Yeah, Friday afternoon. Did you get to watch that press conference? Did anything stick out to you? Did you like Duarte after hearing that?
Yeah, he's very much grown on me since then. I think, like I mentioned before, every Pacer fan was a little bit let down, but as time went on, I feel like his game started to grow on you a bit. He's got a great backstory. Also feels like he is a more NBA-ready guy from day one compared to a Moses Moody. And also, you know, Rick Carlisle has a history of not playing rookies. Well, it feels like Duarte may be that exception, being 24 years old. I think this is someone that can contribute from them right away. So I'm looking forward to that. When you can already see how free agency is going right now, if we were going to draft someone we really weren't going to play and then we didn't do anything in free agency, it would hurt even more.
Mm-hmm. Well, I agree with that. Here's what I will say about Chris Duarte. He's a good basketball player. He really is, and he really can help this team. I just feel like that ceiling is not as high as Moses Moody. Well, we don't know that, because Moody could be a flop in the NBA, and Duarte could just continue to get better. I mean, we cannot sit here and say that Moody is going to have at the end of his career, have a higher ceiling. We might project it, but we can't say it because it's the unknown, Botch. But I think, you know, just the thought of getting a guy that was 19 years old in Moses Moody instead of a 24-year-old, by the way, a guy older than Malik Monk, who just signed with the Lakers, and we had a conversation about that on Twitter. But that's what I'm saying. It's just Duarte is a guy that I think can play right away. But Isaiah Jackson, the guy they traded Aaron Holiday in the 31st pick for, which also included 4 second-round picks. So basically 4 second-round picks and Aaron Holiday for Isaiah Jackson, for Isaiah Jackson was the deal. What did you think about that move?
Alex, thank God I'm not a betting man, because I did not see the Pacers taking a center in the first round, not even really in the draft, but here they are again. The front office could not help themselves. They have just a fascination for centers. And Isaiah Jackson, I mean, look, he's a good player. He is. But, I mean, what are we doing here? Is this like Pokemon, collect them all? I mean, how many centers can you have? So, look, I like the pick. I don't see him being really able to step on the court much this year at all, which, you know, it could be a little bit frustrating. But I really do like the fact that he's a really good shot blocker and all SEC defensive, you know, conference player over there. And in the same theme with Chris Duarte, you're going on the defensive side of things, as he was a Pac-12 all defensive player. But it's like a little bit of a now and later type selection. It made me think, and I cannot be alone in this, that, hey, you just drafted a really good shot blocker. You might be preparing for life after Miles Turner. Well, that does not appear so right now, because, like I mentioned on yesterday's episode, there is no market for trading for centers right now. It's as dry as can be. But Isaiah Jackson, a clear stash pick that a lot of people liked. I mean, I listened to Chad Ford's Big Board podcast, and they graded. They really liked that pick. They had Isaiah Jackson creeping into the back end of the lottery, which probably was going to be a bit too high for him. But getting him at 22, I thought was really good value. Could the Pacers probably have solved some other needs? Yes, but this was the case where they might have went with the best player available.
I just think they like Isaiah Jackson. I don't think it was necessarily the best player available. I think it was just someone they really had interest in. And, yeah, there's arguments that he could be a power forward. I'm not going to get into that. I mean, if you look at his numbers from last year, he's not a shooter. He shot like 2 threes all year long in Kentucky. So he's not a guy that's even looking to try to shoot the basketball. He's a rebounder. He's a shot blocker. And he's a lob threat. And that's what Carlisle kind of mentioned that he wanted. And in the press conference that he had when they introduced him as the head coach, he said, we need guys that can be more of a lob threat. He mentioned Turner could do that. So we don't know if they're going to make any trades. I think right now we're pretty safe to bet that they don't. But I think that with what Isaiah Jackson does bring to the table, you give him a couple years in the G League and maybe some time to play, you know, those minutes when we're getting blown out or we're blowing somebody out, you know, just the end of the fourth quarter minutes. I think he can develop. Number one, it puts pressure on Goga to get better, stay healthy, and continue to work hard. But it also gives you insurance, number one, if you have injuries like we had last year. And three, if they do decide to move on from Turner in 2 years when his contract's up and re-sign LeVert and Brogdon, then they've got somebody already on the roster that kind of fills the same things that Miles Turner does.
Oh, there's a few statements to live by, and one of them is that Kentucky players are always better in the NBA. They always are, and I think Isaiah Jackson, we have not seen the best of him yet, so I'm excited to see him develop over time. But when you mentioned Goga, Alex, what is it with Goga in the summer league? It's like it's not meant to be. We just saw a report today that he's got a back injury, that he's not been able to practice the last couple days. Summer league is starting up in the coming days for the Pacers, and we don't know what Goga's status is going to be, whether it was, you know, his visa status in the past. I think he was sick last year or whatever it was. It just has not worked out. And I know it's not make or break, but I really want to see Goga unleashed and able to just feast in the summer league. Doesn't even need to play all the games, just to get a couple games and expanded minutes, not that 9 minutes per game that we always see. I want to see Goga play that 15 to 20 and really be a focal point of the offense there. And I don't know if we're going to get to see it this summer. I think it'll happen eventually, but for now, the injury bug has got him once again.
Yeah, it's like anytime he gets a big opportunity, everything just kind of falls out of place for him. And I feel bad for the guy because I think he's got some talent.
He does.
But at the end of the day, if you're not healthy, the best ability is availability, and he doesn't have that. And there was times last year we saw him playing in the rotation, and then he would be benched the next game and wouldn't see the floor at all. So it's really hard to fathom what Rick Carlisle is going to do with this rotation. I kind of want to pivot here a little bit from our draft conversation to our rotation conversation here, because based on how this roster is set up, Bocce, I'm just going to put it out there right now. If Torrey Craig and Jeremy Lamb take minutes away from O'Shea Brissett and Chris Duarte in the rotation, I'm going to be very upset. I know that O'Shea Brissett is a non-guaranteed contract, but what he did last year, he is exactly the small ball four that you need, especially coming off the bench, not playing such a position of need the Pacers desperately asked him to play last year, but I thought he really showed off what he can do. And then you don't draft a 24-year-old shooting guard who is ready to play right now and put him on the bench behind Jeremy Lamb or even Edmund Sumner. I feel like this is a guy that you have to play right away and give him those minutes. And if he doesn't earn them over the period of the season, then you give maybe a Lamb or a Sumner a chance to take them. But I will be absolutely devastated as a fan if we have to sit there and watch Chris Duarte sit on the bench and not crack the rotation.
Oh, it would be a major storyline amongst Pacer fans throughout the season, because it's not just that they drafted him, you know, and at age 24 being like, you know what, do we have a role for him? It's that Golden State was reportedly still trying to get him after the draft, and the Pacers were turning down offers. So, and those offers were believed to be Moody and other assets. You know, whether it's real or not, we've heard J. Michael confirm that it is, but they have to have a plan for him. They have to. And I just feel like, yeah, obviously, you had the draft first. I would like to believe that they drafted Duarte before they knew they were going to sign Torrey Craig. You never know when these conversations actually start in free agency. But, man, to go back to O'Shea Brissett, that guy was a true diamond in the rough. Really the only bright spot in, like, the last month or so of the NBA season for the Pacers. Brissett is someone that you don't want to see him just kind of at the end of the bench. No, this guy was onto something last year. I think he's going to get better. I want to see him have an opportunity. And Jeremy Lamb, it's like, look, I'm sorry. I'm willing to just admit that it just didn't work out here. And maybe he could still be a good player this year. Now that he's healthy, maybe he could. But you know what? There's just other guys that we need to be invested in, younger guys that I think continue to get better. Sumner was one of those guys that did take a step forward, but it's just he's going to be on a one-year deal at this point. You know, he expires after this year. You know, he's going to be looking for, truthfully, the best offer that he can get in free agency, being a second-round pick, a guy that slid to the second round. You know, you got to think that Sumner is looking for as much money as possible, and the Pacers probably won't re-sign him. You don't know. Who knows? But guys like Duarte are on the roster now, and I feel like you have to at least – give him a real shot. Otherwise, if we're watching these other younger players excel, it's going to hurt that much more. It's going to be another storyline that doesn't paint the front office in a positive light. And we've seen too many of those.
Yeah, because if you're not going to play your rookie that you draft, especially a guy who's 24 years old, then why not just take Moses Moody at that point? Yeah,
exactly.
You know, that's all I'm saying. Like, if you want to have a guy that, you know, you're not used to picking a rookie, you don't really want to play a rookie, well, then draft a 19-year-old guy that has a wingspan that's 7'5". You know, like, I don't know if it's really that long. I think it's like 7'3". It's ridiculously more significant than what his actual height is. So I think that that is just a way I look at it. It's like, okay, look, even if you don't play Moses Moody within the first couple of years because you're trying to win with Carlisle and you've got Sumner, you've got Lamb, whatever, like this is still a guy that's only going to be 20, 21 years old by the time those guys are off the books. So it gives him time to develop, and that is something that I think is very important to what this Pacers team needs to do. But Carlisle's not known for playing rookies. I get it that he's had to play some whenever they've been like his best player, aka Luka Doncic. But if you're gonna go after Chris Duarte and he does not crack the rotation, I think it's very silly to me overall. I would really like for them to find a way to make that second unit cohesive and play well together. But I think defensively, if you've got Justin Holiday, Chris Duarte, TJ McConnell, and then whoever they play at that backup four, I think O'Shea Brissett can do it. But defensively, so Torrey Craig's probably better in that role. And then you have a shot blocker and Goga. I'm saying if you're going full five, or if they stagger minutes and put Miles with that second unit, that's a pretty good defensive second unit. So that's all I'm saying. Like, I just feel like Edmund Sumner, and you said a great point there, Facci, he's only on a one-year deal. Duarte is with the Pacers for 2+2 probably when they pick up his option, and then they can have him in restricted free agency. So you're talking probably close to 8 or 9 years they could have Duarte, where Sumner is just the guy that's at the end of the rotation making, you know, just $2 million a year. So I would rather invest my time into a player that's going to be a long-term part of my franchise.
Yep, I couldn't agree more right over there, because, I mean, there was other guys on the board outside of, you know, outside of Moody, outside of Kispert. There was still Jalen Johnson. I know he went at pick 20, but it's like that's someone that, hey, if you really did plan on playing rookies, that's someone you could have stashed and developed. So there's plenty of good players there. So I'm curious to see, you know, what Carlisle's plan is going to be. I don't think that Duarte is just going to have a role like immediately where he's playing, you know, 15 minutes or so. It'll probably slowly come aboard.
I think he should.
In a perfect world, of course. But it's like, let this guy at least be able to hit the court in the beginning. You know, it's just, I don't want to see him just not playing for the first 15 to 20 games of the season until there's an injury. Because at that point, it's going to be alarming. So I think the front office views this team a bit differently than everybody does. I don't know if they truly do think that they are contenders and just staying healthy is the key to really having a lot of success this year. But we know that it's not just about the health of this team. Guys need to get better and develop. And that's where you're looking at guys like Chris Duarte to be able to come in and contribute. O'Shea Brissett to be able to continue. Guys like Ken Goga step up. Is there a can TJ Warren be, he doesn't have to be bubble Warren, but can he be, you know, is there a next gear? Caris LeVert coming off a career year. Okay. Well, can he do it again? Can Malcolm Brogdon continue that fringe all-star status? I mean, these are the questions that we need answered, because if the Pacers can't individually get better, then we're going to be locked into being, you know, a tough out in the first round year after year.
Do the Pacers even make the playoffs?
It's not a guarantee. No. It's not. I mean,
I think I would put money on them more likely being a play-in team than a playoff team in the top six.
I feel comfortable with that. I don't feel comfortable in terms of, hey, yeah, I'm on board. I feel comfortable with what you said, that that's probably going to happen. I think with the play-in games over there, I mean, it's going to be like we're battling to, you know, oh, hey, if we win this, we can get slaughtered by Milwaukee in the first round. You know, they have to do something else. And I mean, even if that move is addition by subtraction in terms of just getting Lamb off to just be able to open up more minutes, then that's what you got to do.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I'm not sold that the Knicks are going to be back at the fourth seed. I think they could take a bit of a dip. Mm-hmm. They've pretty much just re-signed all of their guys from last year, and I thought they overachieved by a long shot. So personally for me, I think that they might regress. Boston's a team that could regress. But at the same time, I think Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, those are two guys that always give you a chance to win. I think they'll be in the mix. We'll see what Washington does under the finish as the eighth seed. They've made some interesting moves. Spencer Dinwiddie coming in there to replace Russell Westbrook as a starting point guard. They got Kuzma, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Harrell. They got Aaron Holiday. They got Isaiah Todd, who they drafted with the 31st overall pick, and Corey Kispert. So, I mean, they've got some decent players on that team, but is it good enough to make the playoffs? And then Chicago today making some splashy moves, getting DeMar DeRozan, getting Lonzo Ball, getting Alex Caruso. I think that they've really solidified a nice, you know, six-man rotation there with Kobe White off the bench as well. So, Facci, I know that there's a lot we can talk about. We got all offseason to talk about it, but I just feel like nothing's guaranteed. And what Miami did last night, acquiring P.J. Tucker and then today getting Markieff Morris, two guys that are just complete dogs for a team. And then you add Lowry, and then you extend Butler. You've got Bam Adebayo. You get Duncan Robinson back. I know I kind of overlooked the Lowry signing, but I think adding Tucker does make things a little bit better for Miami.
It does. And Miami was a team that they underperformed for most of last year. I mean, they really did. You know, they finished in the sixth seed. I do think that they're going to be better. Washington, I think, is definitely going to be in the mix for the play-in, without a doubt. I think they'll be in there. Charlotte missed the playoffs. They could take a step forward. I mean, LaMelo missed a chunk of the season. Gordon Hayward missed a chunk of the season. Yeah. I think that they have some good stuff going on over there. So I don't know where the Pacers are going to finish, but I would not feel comfortable guaranteeing a playoff spot.
And Toronto is a team that I'm really intrigued by. I think
they're going to be better.
Getting Gary Trent Jr. back on that, you know, that deal, they're going to end up, I believe, trading Dragic to Dallas if that doesn't already happen. But that's kind of been the speculation. Is Dragic doesn't really want to be in Toronto. I wish he kind of would stay there because I think he'd actually be a nice fit for that team. But if they're willing to reroute him to, you know, Dallas and maybe get a Dwight Powell back in return, that's not a bad pickup because they need a center. And I think Dwight Powell is a decent player. I really like Nick Nurse as a coach. I don't know if he's that much different than Nate Bjorkgren in terms of philosophy, but I think his players respect him a little bit more.
I think so.
Maybe not so outlandish as Bjorkgren was a little bit last year, but I just think athletically they have a better roster that fits that style of play too. I think that's the biggest thing there. The Pacers roster is not even close and they're as athletic as that Toronto starting five could be. So, I mean, I think Toronto's a really interesting team as well. I mean, I know they lost Lowry, but still, Lowry was hurt for part of the season last year. They've got Fred VanVleet, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam. They drafted Scotty Barnes. They got Chris Boucher. They're going to have Precious Achiuwa, another guy that's just an athletic four. I mean, they're just going to be super athletic. And then, of course, getting Gary Trent back. So I'm intrigued by them as well. I'm not saying the Pacers won't make the playoffs. I'm just saying that I feel like it's more likely they're in that 7-10 range again, which is why fans are kind of frustrated the Pacers haven't made a move. I've gone back and forth, Facci, all day long trying to determine how I really feel because I'm torn. Part of me is like, man, I'm so frustrated that we're not doing anything. We're so like blah. But then the other part of me is like, look, you have to give Rick Carlisle more of the benefit of the doubt here because a lot of fans are doubting the starting five because it's not had great success, but we can't be so short-minded to not think about how good they were just 2 years prior with Nate McMillan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, look, I know it sounds like a broken record to say, hey, this starting five's only played, like, you know, a handful of games together, but that really is the case. It really is. I mean, you can't tell me if T.J. Warren wasn't healthy last year, the Pacers are a better team. I mean, flat out, he played four games. So if he's healthy, if Miles Turner can stay healthy, if Sabonis is healthy, I mean, you're talking about the bench is improved. They are. If everyone can stay healthy, guys like Brissett playing a full season, Edmund Sumner, if he has a role, you know, like a complete role, I think that he was someone who's contributing a lot. And then you got to hope you hit on Duarte. I mean, if he can contribute this year, you're going to feel that this is a deeper team because last year, towards the end, I mean, you saw O'Shea Brissett was having to play center and play 42 minutes. I mean, we're running a 6-7 and below lineup. I mean, they really had just really not much to give. So I think this Pacers team is deeper, but so is the East. The East really is. So just like you mentioned, nothing's a guarantee. Health is obviously going to be, you know, our greatest, factor or could work against us. If Pacers aren't healthy, they might be blowing this up. They really might. I mean, I don't think that they brought in Rick Carlisle to shake things up, but we've talked about it before. There's no market for a center right now, but come the deadline, that's when the Pacers could be, you know, unloading a player, maybe attaching Edmund Sumner to him. You know, maybe they have that Jeremy Lamb expiring deal. Maybe at the deadline, that's when they revisit this.
Yeah, I think it makes more sense probably right now because nobody really knows what's out there. And look, they could be holding off for maybe a Ben Simmons trade or a Dame Lillard trade and trying to get involved in that. I mean, they could just be sitting there on their hands saying, hey, we don't want to rush and make a decision. I mean, maybe that's kind of me thinking positively about what they could be doing. Give Carlisle a chance to see what this starting five can do together. But once one of them gets hurt, I think at this point you just have to say, look, we've got to quit using this as an excuse. Oh, well, we were injured, so we didn't get a chance to see it. Look, and eventually you're going to have to find healthy players. And if you can't stay healthy, then you have to move on from that player or find a different direction to go. Because, look, there's going to be times when Malcolm Brogdon is just out for part of the season. And if you don't have a third-string point guard on this roster, it doesn't make any sense. So I think they really need to address that, number one. Number two, we'll see how this double big lineup works. Rick Carlisle really hinted at staggering their minutes. He's probably going to not play Goga Batadze much this year, which I'm okay with if it results in the Pacers winning basketball games. Do I think that Turner will go to the bench or Sabonis will go to the bench? I do not think that. They'll probably start together. The guys, they've said it several times, they're really close. These two guys are really close. They want to play together and they want it to succeed. But at the end of the day, Fauci, it's just one of those things where we don't believe and we haven't seen it yet where two guys that are natural centers can play together and it result in a championship or a deep playoff run. So I think if you wait till close to the deadline, teams at this point might not want to pay a center $17.5 million or $18.5 million. But look at what Orlando did. They traded Vucevic around the deadline. Teams might be like, oh, I need a shot blocker on our team. We had an injury or whatever happened, and they want to really be competitive. And I think the Pacers have two really quality centers that could be traded at the deadline.
Oh, an injury changes everything. And when you start to look at, the deadline, I mean, there might be the ability to, if you are trading, one of the bigs, to strap another guy, with Miles Turner or whatever it is, say you're dealing with Sabonis. I don't know. Either way, both guys making right around $18 million. If you attach Jeremy Lamb and his $10.5 million, you're talking about the ability to bring in a really good player. So, and that very well could happen. I mean, there's going to be some teams that if they're out of it, come the deadline, they're looking to unload. We saw that happen. So we could very well see it again. But for right now, I wish I could just, spew out all this positive news. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. Pritchard's got this up his sleeve. Guys, this might be it. I didn't hear a single peep on Twitter today about the Pacers being linked to anyone or any trade or nothing. So it could be a quiet next few days while we're just on the outside looking in.
Very well could be, Fauci. So before we take a break, I want to ask you this. I put this question out on Twitter. I said, coming in, we've got Chris Duarte, Isaiah Jackson, and Torrey Craig. Going out is Doug McDermott, Aaron Holiday, and Jakarr Sampson. Did the Pacers get better this offseason?
Right now, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no because Doug McDermott was coming off of a career year. Great, great connection with Sabonis. I mean, this is a guy that shot over 50% from the field. Good three-point shooter. Really was just a good slasher. I mean, he was doing a lot. Aaron Holiday, look, he needed to go. So I feel like that's all right to lose. We don't know exactly what we're getting out of Duarte yet. So we're going to wait and see there. But for right now, and they added Torrey Craig. All right, look, I mean, like, I don't want to make it seem like he's like a bag of beef jerky, but it's like he's a good signing. It's like, all right, yeah, cool. We got Torrey Craig. But I don't think that we got any wins better than last year.
Yeah. Well, here's what I'll say. Well, I think McDermott might be the best overall player out of those six. You have to put into consideration that Aaron Holiday was probably not going to find the court in the rotation, and neither was Jakarr Sampson. So you bring in Torrey Craig. Does he find a spot in the rotation? That is to be determined. We do not know what Torrey Craig is going to bring to this team, but I do think that if you look at the changes that they made, they got rid of really bad defenders. McDermott was not a good defender.
No.
Aaron Holiday showed moments, but sometimes I think he got burned a little bit too much. Jakarr was a fine defender, but they've significantly upgraded on defense. One of the things I did not put in there was Bjorkgren out, Rick Carlisle in. And I think player-wise, they might have taken a bit of a bit of a dip, but it's still kind of up in the air because we don't know what Duarte is going to do in the NBA. So if Duarte has a good season, I think that it's they maybe not got worse or better. They may have stayed the same. But if Duarte is just unplayable, you know, a rookie that's not ready, then there's fear that they could have – I think they would have taken a step back in terms of the moves they made. But if you include Carlisle and Bjorkman in this, it's night and day difference, man. I mean, Carlisle is the only thing that has given me some sense of hope that the Pacers could maybe exceed expectations for where I have them as a seventh seed heading into the heading into next season.
Oh, yeah. I have friends that are Knicks fans and Bulls fans, and they're each texting me, Torrey Craig, ? Are you going to do anything else? And I'm like, guys, look, we got a real coach and a real coaching staff this year. Last year, we had a maniac. We had a guy that was named Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. Like, I mean, that you can't put that description on a coach and think it's going to be a good thing. So clearly there was issues in the locker room last year. We have a real championship-winning coach with – what seems like very credible, you know, good assistant coaches compared to last year. I mean, I don't know who's really gotten jobs off of last year's coaching staff, but I mean, I know Bill Baino's back, but even Bill Baino left. So it's like it's a whole situation of from a coaching standpoint, like you mentioned, night and day. It's really the only way to describe it.
Completely agree, Fauci. Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will have Keith Smith. Where's Keith at right now? Is he still with Yahoo Sports, or I think he's with the Spotrac, isn't he?
He might be. I know he's been with Yahoo Sports for quite some time, but we're going to get that update straight from Keith.
All right, we'll be right back after this.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yo, 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 it's your boy Fauci, and if you enjoy listening to Setting the Pace, then what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show? And there's no better place to host than Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all the listening platforms. And the best part is you can get all this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge you just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about your favorite team, the Pacers, then make your voice heard and hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply to bwhustle.com/join. So check out the description in the box of this episode to find out more, but that's bwhustle.com/join. Let's go, Pacers.
All right, everybody, we are back, and we are joined by Keith Smith. Keith, before I ask you how you're doing, can you give us an update? Because I think I butchered it in the exiting segment of where you are currently employed at covering the NBA.
Yeah, so I'm primarily with SpotTrack now.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my home. That's where I do a lot of my work. I'm still with Celtics Blog. I'm also with Front Office Show. That's our YouTube channel and podcast that we have launched, relaunched again, but however you want to call it. But yeah, but where, you know, I keep busy.
Awesome, so, man. Go ahead, Fotch.
Keith, I mean, we're on day two of free agency, but I don't want to say all the fun ended quickly, but in the first couple of minutes, I mean, we saw a lot of players snatched up. I mean, what's kind of some of the bigger signings that really sticks out to you so far?
Yeah, I think, some of the ones that stand out are the big money ones, Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul, Mike Conley, older point guards really getting paid and doing quite well for themselves on the free agent market. That Lonzo Ball sign and trade, the DeMar DeRozan sign and trade, that was a big one. I'm just kind of glancing through because I know I'll miss some if I don't take a look at my list here. It's been such a wild, we're 25 hours plus in, and, I can give you a number that might be, kind of crazy to you guys. In the first 24 hours, right at 6 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern, there was over $2.5 billion in new money added to the NBA through new contracts and contract extensions.
Wow.
That's pretty wild. I mean,
right?
Oh, my goodness. Especially the one Steph Curry is signed to. That extension is just massive. I had a friend text me and said, hey, I figured you were wondering, but this is how much money Steph Curry makes every day after his $215 million segment. $589,000, $41.96. So I was
good like, work if you can get it.
Yeah. I said, good grief. I'd like to make that in a decade, right? So, but anyway, I think one of the things that's really interesting here about this whole entire free agency is the big names weren't really there, but there were some guys that did go on the move. And I think one of the most intriguing teams is right here in the Central Division with the Indiana Pacers. That's the Chicago Bulls. They're really trying to retool this roster. I like what they've done, but how good is this roster with the moves they've made?
Yeah, let's see. I like the Lonzo Ball and Alex Caruso additions. I'm a little less excited about the DeMar DeRozan addition. I think that sometimes you go almost a bridge too far with building a team, and I really kind of liked Thad Young for them. I thought he was going to do a nice job at the four, kind of a defensive-minded guy alongside Vucevic. Now they're going to put a lot of pressure on Patrick Williams to really step into that four role, at least defensively, and push to keep things going. I like Patrick Williams a lot, but that's a big ask of a second-year player. So we'll see. I thought they had enough shot creation with LaVine and Ball, and Vucevic is a guy who can do a lot with the ball in his hands. But, they're definitely a better team today than they were yesterday. And I think that's part of what it's about. It's trying to prove to LaVine, hey, we're not sitting back on our laurels, just hoping to build this thing up. We're going to actually go out and get some stuff done.
I am a little bit worried about the Chicago Bulls. I do see them as a playoff team this year in the East. They do look very well improved. But, one player that you mentioned, Lonzo Ball, I mean, Keith, did you find it a little bit of a head scratcher that New Orleans really didn't have any interest in matching an offer sheet for Lonzo?
I thought you were going to ask me if I found it a head scratcher that they did the deal in a matter of seconds when free agency opened. A double sign and trade. That's an absolutely incredible work because no one would ever dare to tamper in this NBA.
Of course.
Of course that would never happen. No. I think for the Pelicans, I think this was kind of a piece of good business on their side from the standpoint of how happy was Ball going to be there. If they could have played hardball and said, hey, you're a restricted free agent. We're going to hold tight. We're going to make this difficult. Go get an offer sheet and all those things. And I think they really looked at it and said, why are we going to fool around with all this? This isn't worth it. If he doesn't want to be here anymore, let's at least recoup something out of it. They did in a couple guys. So I think that's kind of the idea behind it, because if you look at it, he wasn't necessarily the best fit for that Pelicans team, but this is a guy who can actually play. And this is coming from someone in myself who is not a big Lonzo Ball fan until about a year or so ago. But the shooting looks real now. His playmaking is good. His defense has always been pretty good. So I think for the Bulls, this is a nice fit alongside Zach LaVine, because you need, you know, ball movers, guys who can shoot off that second, third pass. And then you need somebody who's going to absolutely lock in on that defensive end. So I think this is a good signing for them.
Yeah, no, I thought it was a great signing for Chicago. But if I'm the Pelicans, there's no way I'm letting Lonzo go for Thomas Satoransky and Garrett Temple. It just, even though they brought Devontae Graham in, and I know they needed some guard depth with that roster, I just felt like, man, they're really underselling on what Lonzo is. And even if that's the case and Lonzo didn't want to be there, I felt like they could have at least matched the offer sheet and then traded him elsewhere, because he's still so young. I think teams would have been really intrigued, and maybe they would have been able to get more find somebody else that fits their roster a little bit better than I think the guys that got back could have. So I want you to touch on that comment that I made, and you can shut me down if I'm bad, but I also want to get your thoughts on Pacers small forward Doug McDermott leaving for the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah. I'll touch on the Ball stuff first. Maybe they could have got more. I'm fairly certain that's what you ask. I apologize. Yeah, this time of year, I get very distracted by shiny objects, such as Twitter. So anytime anything flows by, I'm like, wait, what was that? Was that a signing? A trade? What happened? I'm like a fish from Finding Nemo in that way. But it's, maybe you could have if you were in New Orleans, but I think this is a case of Ball really wanted to be in Chicago. Let's play nice with him and his agency. We know that agency has some power around the NBA, so let's do the right thing and try to take care of him. Doug McDermott to the Spurs. I saw a lot of people kind of hating on the deal. I think it's fine. $14 million a year, average annual value for, one of the guy who's one of the best shooters in the NBA. I think the people who are hating on it don't know how good of a year Doug McDermott has had last season. I think the Pacers, because they weren't as good last year, I think they kind of fell off the national radar for some people. And I think they missed out on, just how good Doug McDermott was last season. So I think, that one's a good deal for the Spurs. I don't mind it. That's a team that needed some shooting, someone who could come in and play the three and the four and do that for them. So I like that one. Some of the other stuff the Spurs did, I'm kind of confused by and don't fully understand, but the McDermott one, I like that. And I do think that's actually a pretty big loss, the sneaky big loss for the Pacers, because they just, they replaced him, but in a very different way.
McDermott felt like if you love him, let him go, because he really did have such a good year, but the Pacers are not, a McDermott away from being in that upper echelon. So mm-hmm. I feel like when he was coming off of a 3-year, $21 million deal, he essentially got double that this time around. And, at that point, the Pacers elected to go with TJ McConnell. They brought McConnell back, I believe it was 4 years, $32.5 million. What did you think of the McConnell deal? Because they got it done immediately. And when the Pacers traded Aaron Holiday, it felt like this was, all but a done thing.
Yeah, I think that's a great value for TJ McConnell. This is a guy who can primarily, he's going to be your backup point guard, and I think he's one of the very best backups in the league. You can even play him alongside Malcolm Brogdon if you need to, because Brogdon has extensive experience playing off the ball. It's funny. I was not a TJ McConnell fan for a long time when he was with Philly. I just don't like non-shooters at the point guard position. But I think what McConnell has done is, and I mean this with every bit of respect in the world, trust me, I'm saying this as a compliment. There may be no bigger pain in the ass in the league than TJ McConnell on the defensive end of the floor. It just gets right up into guys. It feels like every game he steals an inbound pass, and gets himself a layup or creates something good for the team. He's just, he's one of those guys when you go against him, I've talked to other players and you're like, it's just, he just annoys guys. That's great. Right. But he doesn't do it in the way, maybe some others do with some flopping and maybe some dirty play here and there. He's just tough. He's hard nosed. He's one of the true pass first point guards that's left in the league. And I think what he has learned to do is he's never going to be the guy who's going to, you know, take two dribbles out of pick and roll, pull up and shoot a jump shot. It's just not who he is. But what he has been able to figure out is, all right, I'm not going to shoot, but what I'll do is I'll break this defense down. I'll create, I'll drive and kick. I'll pitch the ball around. We'll get movement out of this. And then when he is open, generally in and around the painted area, he'll shoot the ball. So yeah, I think that's a great value for them. And of course, losing Aaron Holiday, I'm not as upset about that trade as maybe some others are. I think, you know, this became a real necessity for the Pacers. And I think, you know, they did really well to keep McConnell in the fold.
Yeah, so I think one of the question marks for the Pacers going forward is what do they do with that third string point guard, because they don't really have that on the roster right now. They could cut Keelan Martin, who will become, I think his non-guaranteed contract becomes guaranteed after August 7th or on August 7th, around that time. So the Pacers could easily just cut him and sign a third string point guard, but that is still to be addressed. With trading Aaron Holiday, they brought back Isaiah Jackson, a power forward center from Kentucky. And then with the remaining money that they had, they did sign Torrey Craig yesterday. So talk on Torrey Craig for me, please, and let me know if there's any backup point guards you think the Pacers could look at with that third string point guard potential.
Yeah, the Torrey Craig addition is really interesting for this team because they don't have somebody like him on the roster. They don't have a lockdown defensive wing there. They have guys who can play defense, but Torrey Craig that's what he does. He's a, you know, lockdown defender. Really one of those guys who can defend two through most fours in the league, especially as the fours become more perimeter based and a little bit smaller in size. So I think they got a great value on that contract. They didn't pay him, you know, much at all, you know, to sign their 2 years, $10 million. That's great money for Torrey Craig. So I think the Pacers, that's another good value signing. And it was important to nail a couple value signings like they did with Craig and McConnell, because this roster has gotten fairly expensive. They don't have any super high contracts or any contracts that you look at and say, boy, that's a terrible deal. They don't have a single one of those, but they do have a bunch of guys who make between $10 million and about $22 million on the roster. I want to say they've got six or seven guys like that. I think it's six. And that adds up very, very quickly to being, you know, right around the tax. And I think they are operating smartly by looking at it and saying, you know what, we're not really a title contender right now, but we want to be good. We'd like to be in the playoffs. So being around the tax is not the end of the world, but we really don't want to go deep into it. So we'll see. Now, as far as backup point guards go on the market, there's a handful left out there that maybe they could go out and get. You know, one of the guys I would have liked for them, Ish Smith, is now gone. I think Raul Neto could be kind of interesting for them on a minimum, because he's a guy who played off the ball a lot with Washington last year next to Westbrook in some lineups. So that'd be kind of interesting. I think Brad Wanamaker would come cheap enough, and he's been, you know, a very productive player on limited minutes. And then you're dipping down into the, you know, guys you're kind of hoping to catch lightning in the bottle on, someone like Frank Ntilikina, Dennis Smith Jr. My guess is if they're going to add more depth, it could come through the version of a trade. And that may be where this goes. I know they've been kind of rumored with all sorts of people. So, you know, we'll see if that's, you know, the way they go. But right now, you know, my guess is it'll be some kind of young upside guy, or maybe somebody they can stash on a two-way deal, you know, there. And now that kind of becomes your third point guard, now that they've loosened up the two-way restrictions on how many days they can spend with the big club.
You know, the two terms that are tossed around that are like nails on the chalkboard for Pacer fans are running it back and being a tough out in the first round. And the Pacers fans, we don't want to be a part of that, but it does not seem like there is much of a trade market for centers right now. I mean, the Pacers, they're stockpiling them, you know, almost by the dozen. They have four centers on the rosters right now after drafting Isaiah Jackson. But right now, it doesn't seem like there's any teams really looking for a center. Do you think that the Pacers are going to, you know, be able to unload a center? Or is this one of those where, hey, there's really no one looking to take on a contract like Miles Turner right now, despite being a real good player?
Yeah, so I have been saying for months, whether it be on front office show, in Spotify green room rooms, in random conversations with my wife, who's like, I don't care. Why are you telling me this? That they're going to split up Devonta Sabonis and Miles Turner. I just feel like they have pushed it as far as you can go with those two playing together. And it's not that it's been bad. It just hasn't taken them to, I think, the heights they hoped it would. My thought was, especially when they re-signed Sabonis, that they said, hey, we have two guys here under pretty good contracts now. Their strengths offset the other's weaknesses. You know, we're really going to make this work. But in the end, they're both fives. And in the NBA, you really have a hard time playing two fives together unless one of them can really get it done at the four. And that's been always kind of the challenge. It becomes a little bit of a messy situation. And I know, you know, talking with different folks with the Pacers and folks around the league, the hope was Turner would defend kind of the perimeter guys out on the four, at the four rather. But then that turned into, if you do that with him, he's too far away from the basket, which removes maybe his greatest strength, of which is rim protection. So that becomes a really kind of messy situation there. So I think you're absolutely right, though, in they have I don't want to say shopped Turner, because that sounds like they're kind of calling everybody in the league and saying, hey, you want to trade for Miles Turner? And that's not necessarily the case. I think they've talked with teams. Teams have engaged them initially. They've reached out to some teams. But it's exactly what you said, is they're finding it hard to find a deal for him because he's a five who makes $18 million a year. And unless you're a team that is really looking at and saying, you know what we're missing is a floor spacing, rim protecting five, and that's going to be what puts us over the top, It's hard to convince yourself that spending $18 million a year is the way to go at that position. The center position's kind of starting to become like the running back position in the NFL, where it's, if you're really, really great and it's what you really, really need, you're going to get paid or the team's going to spend some money. But everybody else, you kind of plug and play and move along.
Well, it looks like former Pacer guard George Hill is going to be rejoining the Milwaukee Bucks.
I just saw that.
Shams Charania coming out with that. So congratulations to the hometown hero and IUPUI graduate George Hill going back to Milwaukee. I think that's a good fit for him. I liked him there. But I do want to go back to what you just talked about there, Keith, in terms of Miles Turner and, you know, potentially breaking that duo up. Because personally for me, it's just my gut feeling. I think they want to see what they can do under Carlisle and then maybe make a trade at the deadline. It just feels like this is kind of what they want to see if they have it. And Carlisle mentioned in the opening press conference when he was introduced as the new coach, maybe staggering their minutes. I think it could be something similar to what McMillan did, where he really did a good job of staggering those minutes together. I just think that this might stunt the development of Goga Batadze, a guy they invested the 18th overall pick in just a few years ago. So is there anything out there that you've heard in terms of the Pacers or teams that could be interested in a Miles Turner trade?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I think the Pelicans were interested, but I think the Pacers made the right play because they did not want to take back Steven Adams or Eric Bledsoe in a trade like that. So that kind of removed that path for them to have interest. It was funny. Somebody had said to me, well, they could 100% dump him on Oklahoma City. Well, yeah, you can dump anybody on Oklahoma City, but that's not what we're doing here, right? Turner is not a guy who needs salary dumped. Where, you know, that's about crossing seven or eight bridges too far from where Miles Turner is. I know they had engaged with the New York Knicks, who had a ton of cap space, to see, you know, hey, you're interested for a draft pick maybe? And then, you know, they would have just absorbed him in a space that didn't ultimately go anywhere. I've heard a couple of the league's upper echelon teams like the Nets, the Clippers, the Lakers, they've had some interest, but finding that salary match gets kind of difficult on their side because they don't necessarily have the contracts that can be sent back. So right now, I think, you know, unless they can really find a team that says, boy, you know what, we're a Miles Turner away from, you know, launching ourselves into either maybe a playoff team into definitely being a playoff team or away from being a playoff team into a finals contender, I think it's more likely that he does just stick there, at least to start the season. I think you're spot on with saying that what they'll do is they'll probably try to stagger their minutes. One of them will come out, you know, 5-6 minutes into the game, and you'll see them play, you know, opening each half together and then kind of go from there at that point.
You know, Keith, there's very few teams left that have, you know, a significant amount of money left. But One player that Pacer fans are screaming for the rooftops to try and be able to unload is Jeremy Lamb. It's $10.5 million. It's an expiring deal. It's not a bad contract, but Lamb's had an injury history over the last few years. What do you think it would take to be able to unload Lamb? Like, what do you think you'd have to attach to get him off the books for this year?
Yeah, probably a couple seconds, because that's not that big of money, and you could, you know, clearly do that with Oklahoma City. Sam Presti loves picks, like I love pizza. So, you know, let's, you know, make a deal happen right away. So, you know, that you could do that. Or I think maybe what's better for the Pacers is let's see how the year goes, hang on to him, and then use that number in a trade later. We've seen so many of these trades. For example, right, we talked about DeMar DeRozan going to the Bulls. So when you look at that, that trade was only made possible because the Bulls could send back Thad Young and Alfredo Camino's expiring contract. So if you're the Pacers, if you're sitting there saying, boy, you know, what we really need is the, you know, shooter to replace Doug McDermott. And we're in, you know, late January, all of a sudden Jeremy Lamb's contract starts looking pretty good to teams that might be looking to get off it. And that could be, hey, Jeremy Lamb's our salary match. Now we're paying for that shooter is with a first round pick or something, you know, of that ilk. And that's how we're really going to get him, where Lamb isn't the big piece, but Lamb allows you to match salary and trade. So my guess is there's not a huge rush. They're basically right at the luxury tax. They can get under if they need to. So my guess is he's probably going to stick at least into the season. And then let's see where it goes. How much he plays? Yeah, we'll see. You know, healthy Caris LeVert, Justin Holiday back. I like Edmund Sumner quite a bit. I think he can play a little bit there. I don't know how much you really need, you know, Jeremy Lamb on the floor, but probably just enough to make sure teams know, hey, Jeremy Lamb's around and he, you know, he's all right. He's healthy. He's ready to go. And then see what you can do in season.
Yeah, and that's a great point, because I was thinking about that earlier today. I said, well, if the Pacers were trying to be splashy and maybe make a big trade for Ben Simmons, and you know, that market for Philadelphia, they're not really getting what they want. And so the Pacers come back with the Brogdon offer. They can maybe throw Jeremy Lamb in that trade with, you know, multiple picks instead of the one, or they could throw a Goga Batadze in there, a nice young guy that they just drafted a few years ago, like I mentioned. I mean, I'm not saying that's the package that would get it done, but it's like that salary filler could be really beneficial later down the road. I find it hard to believe that the Pacers drafted Chris Duarte, a 24-year-old guard from Oregon, and then they don't plan to play him in the rotation. That's the thing that's been confusing and perplexing to me, is just the way this roster is built and kind of how they have a logjam there. It feels like in that 2-4 or that 2-3 spot with the shooting guard, small forwards, yeah, between all the guys they have on their roster. I'm just not sure how they go about building that second unit, because I personally would rather see Duarte, because I feel like he's a part of the future. But at 24, if they don't play him right away, it seems kind of silly to draft somebody that old and then not plug him in right away for a guy like Lamb, or even a guy like Sumner, who's only got $2 million left on 1 year.
Yeah, I agree with you. You kind of hit the nail on the head. This is not one of these guys who, you know, turns 19 part way into the season and you can, you know, you have him for, you know, a couple development years. He should be closer to a finished product just because of his age. So I'm with you. I think that's, you know, a really good point that he's got to mix in there. I think the single biggest thing this team is missing, which, not to kind of belabor the McDermott point, because clearly if they had their choice, they would have kept Doug McDermott at $14 million and let Jeremy Lamb just go. But that's not how it works, right? That's not the way the salary cap is. This isn't the NFL where you just cut guys and move on. You know, they would have had Lamb sitting there as dead salary had they done that. So I think what they're missing is another four. TJ Warren, sure, he can play small ball four without an issue, no problem. But as you look through the rest of the roster, who else is a four on this team? O'Shea Brissett? All right, can do some stuff, but do you really want O'Shea Brissett playing a, you know, big rotation minutes? We already talked about the Turner Sabonis issues, kind of with that pairing there, and, you know, is either one of those guys really a four? So that's where I think you're kind of, you know, hitting it there, where you might be able to deal from a position of strength a little bit, and this might be one where it's, hey, you take on our $10 million Jeremy Lamb, and we'll take on your $10 million power forward or 3-4 guy, then bring him in. And it's just a better fit for both of us on each side, and off we go. And that's, I think, what we're starting to reach that point of the offseason where it's like, all right, we've got this little issue, you've got this little issue. Is there something we could do that becomes workable for both of us?
You know, Keith, give it to us straight. If things stay the way they are, how do you view this Pacers team in the Eastern Conference playoff race?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the old caveat here with this. If they stay healthy, they should be right in the playoff mix. There's absolutely no reason. And I mean the actual playoff mix, not just the play-in. I think they could get to six. Let's map it out, right? Brooklyn and Milwaukee. They're both going to be really good. I think the Heat are probably going to be pretty good. So there's three teams. Philadelphia, let's see what they do with Simmons. But unless they completely butcher that trade, which I don't think they will, they'll be pretty good as well. So now you've got four teams. Chicago is going to be good. I think Boston should be good, even just with better health. And then you have the Hawks. Yeah, right. They're not going to go away anytime soon. But one of those teams, the wheels is going to come off, and it's going to be, you know, kind of the season, you know, that just they hate and it all falls apart on them. So I think, you know, the Pacers are the team that could be poised to, after kind of a rough season where things really went poorly for them health-wise with so many of their guys, I think they could really kind of turn this thing around and look pretty good. And all of a sudden we're saying, man, where did the Pacers come from? And we're looking at them, we're like, well, they're just healthy. They're good. They have good players. And this year they stayed healthy. So I'm going to knock on wood, say they stay healthy. And I think they're probably in that 6-8 range in the East. You know, I don't know that they could crack into the home court advantage push, but it wouldn't completely shock me if they stayed super healthy, maybe made a move or two that really makes sense. And then one of those other teams has kind of that nightmare season where it all falls apart on them. Maybe that's their path to pushing up in the conference.
Yeah, I definitely think that they're a team that should make the playoffs. I don't think they'll miss it, but I told Fauci in the first segment that I'm actually banking on them being more of a play-in team with that 7-10 range than I am in the first six, just because there's so many question marks with this team. And I think last year, I just think that the whole Bjorkgren experience for that one season really put a bad taste in the mouth of Pacer fans. And so we haven't seen competent basketball since McMillan was there at the bubble, because just some of the stuff they were doing didn't make any sense. I mean, I think Sabonis last year led the NBA in miles traveled.
That's ridiculous.
A ton of minutes he was playing, and the defense they had him playing out there chasing guys around the perimeter, just not his strong suit. So I think we're kind of overlooking it. I know a lot of fans are mad today. They're like, oh, the Bulls are going to pass the Pacers. They're so much better now with the moves they've made. And I said, well, if you really look on paper, they kind of are similar in how they're built.
Sure.
But I think, you know, the DeRozan comparison to me was more TJ Warren, but I just think TJ Warren is a significantly better shooter from three and defender. So I think the Pacers are still have a better starting five than Chicago. But because it's free agency time, people are making moves. It feels like if you're not making moves, then you're not a good team. But I think this Pacers team still has a lot of really good talent on it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, again, it goes back to get these guys back to playing, you know, somewhere between, you know, 70 to 75 games. And a lot of the things that looked messy last year don't look as bad. I think all of a sudden it's like, okay, you know, I remember this. I mean, we're only, a year out from, because of the whole weirdness with the way that the bubble season played out, but we're only a year away from everybody being absolutely in love with TJ Warren. As you know, the bubble breakout star that wasn't named Devin Booker, you know, everybody was like, man, this guy is, you know, great. You know, what a steal for the Pacers. And then of course, you know, he had the injury issues and that put him out there. So, yeah. So I think that becomes a, you know, a spot where, all right, you know, get him back healthy. You know, let's figure out what they do. I don't think they're done. I don't think there's a massive, you know, monster, you know, franchise, you know, changing move coming. But I feel like there could be something, because, again, no bad contracts. So that makes everything very easy to move in trades. They're a team that I know other teams really like working with, because Kevin Pritchard is very straightforward. He doesn't play a lot of games with people. It's you know, you call them and say, are you interested in? He's going to tell you no. Or, yeah, but for, you know, X, and then that kind of sets the tone for the negotiation. So yeah, I think they're in a position to do some stuff here. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow. It might be a couple months from now, you know, when we're into the season or even leading up to the trade deadline, but I think the Pacers are in pretty good shape.
You know, one team that we really haven't seen do anything since free agency started, but they did quite a few things in the previous weeks, a team that you know quite well, the Boston Celtics. Can you take us through a little bit about what the Celtics are doing? Because, you know, they were able to unload Kemba's contract. They took on Al Horford. Then they traded Moses Brown for Josh Richardson. So what is it that Boston has planned? Are they gearing up for next season?
Yeah, that's what it looks like they're doing. And that's got people kind of concerned, because the way they're pitching it is, we can't spend into the tax this year because we're intending to spend a lot of money next year. The challenge with that is, it is almost impossible, unless you're in like a Miami Heat type of situation where you have somebody like Duncan Robinson on an extremely small cap hold, to spend cap space to go get somebody, then re-sign one of your own free agents to a massive deal and also end up in the luxury tax the same season to use cap space. It's only happened a couple times in the history of the league. So the challenge is, those two things don't go hand in hand. And that doesn't really jive for me, where it's, you know, we don't want to spend now because we're going to spend next year. Well, you could still spend now. And they have really – they got people, I think, set down a path of, all right, I get what you're doing. You know, Al Horford for Kemba Walker saved about $7 million. Then this Tristan Thompson news broke that was going to add, you know, about $3 million more. So now we're $10 million under the tax. It sounds like $10 million over the tax is about the range that the ownership is going to green light to pay the tax. So we can re-sign Evan Fournier and be in a position. And then it was immediately, hey, we're acquiring Josh Richardson, which took them right up to the tax again. And now Evan Fournier is left for the Knicks. It's everybody's left kind of wondering, you know, what are we doing here? Are we punting on this season? You know, what do we do now? Because what we're also hearing is, because they're, again, right at that tax line, they don't necessarily want to go add anybody right now, even though there's a couple players that they probably could go add that would fill rotation roles for them, because they're trying to keep everything clean. And that sounds great, to keep your cap sheet clean and be in a really good position. But unless you know, hey, we're going to be in the mix for Bradley Beal, or we're going to be in the mix to trade for Damian Lillard, or free agent X, where he's going to be the guy we're really going to pursue, that starts to become real messy. Because if Portland wins and Dame doesn't want out, now you're in trouble. If Bradley Beal, you know, decides, you know what, I don't want to leave Washington, which is oddly enough, has given no indication he does, including their general manager saying he told him directly that he does not want to leave. Now you're in a position where you're kind of selling hope to people, when it looks like, hey, we could have done a couple of things, but we're sitting here, you know, with our guys. And when you have two, you know, kind of young star talents in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, that's kind of difficult to swallow for a lot of Celtics fans.
Yeah, it is tough. And I think Brad Stevens, being a first time, you know, president of basketball operations, could make fans a little bit worried too, just because, you know, we don't have Danny Ainge in the front office calling the shots or letting you know what deals the Celtics almost made, which is the running gag that we've heard for the past 15 years. But real quick, as we wrap this up, Marcus Smart, are those rumors real or not? Because it seems to be that he could be available, but I just don't know if he is a guy that they would be willing to part with.
Yeah, it sounds like they're not real. Sounds like those were put out there, who knows why or for what reasons. But it sounds like the team has kind of come back through. If you guys know, with the Pacers, who are the ones you can really trust, you know, the front office really sends them stuff and gets them stuff. We have the same thing on the Celtics media side of, you know, hey, when this guy speaks, you know, that came direct from the front office in the media. And there's been a couple of those guys who come out and said, yeah, they're not trading Marcus Smart. They don't want to. That doesn't mean that there's not frustration with him at times. His shot selection can be, quite frankly, mystifying at times. But his defensive ability remains super high. His playmaking is actually really good. I think they are really excited to play him at the point guard role and really say, hey, you're going to run the offense. Because when he has done that in the past, he's actually looked probably about the best he's ever looked, because he's really good at setting the offense, getting things going, and then kind of drifting around. It's when he's off the ball to begin a possession and the ball comes his way with 7-8 seconds left, that's when it's like, oh boy, this is going up. You know that shot's coming, almost no matter where it is. When he's the one setting the offense, it feels a little bit better, because then if it's coming back to him, it's when he's in a position to really score off a secondary attack or creation or something like that. So, yeah, I everything I've heard is they're looking forward to, plugging him in at the point guard spot and running with him. But that's not to say they wouldn't trade him if there wasn't a great deal out there to make, that they felt like this lifts us in the title contention and this is, the deal to be made, right now to put us on top. I don't think that he's, completely, untouchable. I just don't think they're really looking to move him by any means.
Hey, Keith, not going to lie, Pacer fans did have interest when it seemed like Marcus Smart was on the table. But I do hope that we have more excitement to come in free agency, as I hope the fun is not over. But tell everybody where they could find you on social media.
Yeah, and find me on Twitter at KeithSmithNBA. I've been tweeting a lot about free agency and all the deals that are going down and, kind of breaking down the cap ramifications or what kind of deal it looks like these are lining up to be. Be a lot more of that to come towards the end of this week, into the weekend, the week after that as well, when deals start going official and can be signed. That's when the ones that are reported at, a number, we'll give what the real number is instead of the, hey, I did a favor to make the agent look good here. From the reporting, we'll get those real numbers out there. So you can find those at Keith Smith NBA. You can find all that salary information that I've been talking about and referencing throughout the show here over at Spot Track. We've got all 30 teams covered. Every deal is plugged in there with at least an estimate for now, as long as we have it. Those are all in there and ready to go. So yeah, check that out there. And then if you're, for some reason, a Pacers fan that really wants to read up on the Boston Celtics, maybe to find out what's going on with Marcus Smart, you can find my Celtics coverage at Celtics Blog as part of SB Nation.
Hey, Keith, always a pleasure. Appreciate you coming on, and I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Well, Focci, I think Keith Smith is always fun to have on. He has great insight on the NBA. He does a fantastic job covering the entire league, and he really knows, individual teams as well, because imagine not covering the Pacers and being more of a Boston Celtics guy and covering the league and being able to, spew out facts like that and talking to his wife at dinner about the Turbonis pairing. Like, come on, I don't even do that, Focci.
I try. It does not go too far. Babe has heard it all, and she is unamused. But so I do not blame Keith's wife. I'm sure she hears enough Celtics talk that she doesn't want to hear about the Pacers. But, hey, that's where we come in, and we spew out Pacer facts left and right.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. My wife, she's so funny. She'll be like, hey, how'd your podcast go? Were you excited with the moves? And then I'll tell her. And she's like, oh, I don't know who that is. And I'm like, okay. She doesn't know who Torrey Craig is, so she'll have to learn him. She was sad to see McDermott go. I did tell her. I said, yeah. I said, McDermott signed with the Spurs. And she goes, oh, he was the best looking one.
Yeah. That's usually how girls know. Oh, he's cute. And something. It's like, well, yeah, but what about his 3-point shooting?
Yeah. What about his actual basketball skills? But hey. She lets me watch a majority of the games on the big screen when she could be wanting to watch something else. So I appreciate that. And if, she thinks one of the guys is cute, I just have to let it be. But anyway, enough rambling here, Focci. It's been a lengthy episode. So I want to thank all of our listeners and all of our new listeners for supporting the podcast. Really means a lot. If you haven't already, it would be awesome if you could give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and get us there. We are so close to 100 ratings. So that would be absolutely fantastic if you could leave us a nice rating and a review. Please, no negative ones. It hurts our stock. But hey, we are always open to open criticism. But Focci, other than that, where can the people find us on social media?
You can find us on Twitter at SettingThePace3. You can find Alex on Twitter at AlexGoldenNBA. I can be found on Twitter at _FACCI. And you can find us on Instagram at PacersTalk.
And at the end of the day, if you're excited to see Chris Duarte play in Summer League, say these three words.
Let's go Pacers!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.